Blog Talk Radio.
As well as on the Google search or on Yahoo search, you search
search for something, they're immediately have you pegged as a liberal or a conservative or whatever, and they're showing you different sites on your search than they are showing somebody else.
Oh, okay.
All right. So if you pull up, whatever, Obama.
So if I look up food shortages,
yeah,
I'm going to probably find something that liberals have written about that, whereas someone who is a conservative may they might get corporations.
That's right. You're not getting exactly. So you're not going to get the same search. Which really is
I don't think that's right.
I
don't think it's any of their business to look into
but that's what they're doing because
I don't think that's right at all.
IP address and all.
Do you have that?
Yeah, but it's I don't know where it is.
Maybe we can find it.
Actually, it's in my email because George sent it to me, which is
we can find it during the music
quite
break.
Quite staggering, yeah.
During the music break, and
we'll go back to it.
We'll be able to find it and bring it to you folks.
But we're under attack, folks. Like, you can't believe. I mean, you know, you think you got a fair internet. Forget about it. This one I thought was interesting because, you know, NATO is attacking Libya, but, you know, NATO is us. You know, who the hell is kidding?
Well, Britain and France and
Spain. Yeah, but we're the ones doing whatever. We're
just the gophers, Leo.
Yeah, we're the guys doing it. And we put France up front or something and say, here, you know, it's France doing it, which is not. Government buildings on fire in Tripoli containing files of rebel leaders. And as I keep saying, NATO is a de facto world army now getting involved violently in more countries that are nothing whatsoever to do with North Atlantic region. It was officially created to protect during the engineered Cold War. And what it is, it's becoming an arm of our imperialist ambition, is basically
Britain.
Yeah. A security services building and headquarters of Libya Anti-Corruption Agency were on fire in the capital of Tripoli early on Tuesday after apparently being hit by NATO airstrikes. The two buildings on Al-Jubla Boulevard are close to the residence of strongman Gaddafi in an area where two explosions were heard about at 1:30 a.m. on Monday. By 3 a.m., firefighters were battling the control flames that were tearing into the two-facing buildings.
AFP correspondent who was with a group of international journalists brought into the area by Libyan authorities. The head of Libya's Ministry for Inspection and Popular Control, the anti-corruption agency, was the scene and said that some ministry employees had been injured, and at the scene, and said that some ministry employees had been injured but provided no further details. Government spokesman Musa Ibrahim later said that the rebel National Transitional Council had directed NATO to attack the agency in a bid to destroy files related to former regime officials who have joined the rebellion. We believe that NATO has been misled to destroy files on their corruption cases, he told journalists. Parts of Tripoli have been targeted almost daily by NATO-led strikes launched on March 19th after a UN resolution called for the protection of civilians from Gaddafi's regime.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just a farce. I mean,
yeah.
It's a farce. And, I don't know, this is long. That's too long.
Yeah, that's on something else. Babies barcoded for security.
I wondered about that because I thought that was a good idea because what they're doing it so that they don't steal the kids.
Right.
You know? But they're not putting them in. They're just putting a barcode on their back.
Mm.
But a South African public hospital plans to tag babies electronically as one of the several security measures to beat baby snatching. If it goes ahead, Tygerberg Hospital would become the first public health facility in the Western Cape to use the tag. The device is activated if a tagged baby is removed from a specific area. The infrastructure for the plan is expected to be completed next year. To me, that makes sense.
And you wouldn't mix a baby up after birth either.
Exactly.
Because it would be done right in the delivery room.
Yeah, and they're just taping the barcode. They're not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they're implanting anything. Or
let's see what else it says.
Tattooing the kid or anything. You know, it's like,
I wonder if they've had a lot of trouble.
Well, they still have a lot of trouble everywhere.
In some UK hospitals, babies have a personalized electronically programmed tag attached to their ankle. This is different from the tags in use in another South African hospital, Life Kingsbury Hospital in Claremont, Cape Town, which consists of a waterproof barcode placed on the baby's back. The device looks like a plaster. Tyburg spokesman Reagan Bukes said the tagging system has been used for years. There have been several incidents of baby snatching from maternity wards in South African hospitals in recent years. In October last year, a baby boy was snatched from Kayalicha Day Hospital in Cape Town. The safety of babies in hospital was highlighted in July 2009 when Seth Ishel Nukamani was snatched from a maternity ward at the hospital. He was found about a month later. It was established then that no hospital staff had played a role in his abduction, and that a woman had gotten into the ward before smuggling the baby out. She was sentenced to 10 years in jail. In 2005, a newborn disappeared from the hospital in Garukwa, north of Pretoria. At the time of the abduction at Tyburg, a number of measures were announced, including tags and cameras and yada, yada, yada. So that's what they're doing to prevent their kids from being taken.
I don't think that's such a bad idea. I don't
either. But whatever works to keep...
because people are snatching kids.
Yeah, keep
this,
a child
this
in the hospital.
This is an extremely disturbing article.
This article?
But this is a follow-up. But
star eyewitness who named Queen of England in abduction of Aboriginal children dies suddenly. There seems to be an awful lot of eyewitnesses, survivors, and victims of the residential school murders in Canada dying all of a sudden. Those that are scheduled to testify, is this coincidental? The truth will come out no matter what happens. There is nowhere for anybody to hide the truth anymore, and it is better that those that have the knowledge of the truth and help to hide the truth about the murders of Aboriginal people in residential schools speak about it and acknowledge it. If the allegations that the Queen and her husband took 10 Canadian Native children away with them is true, it proves how people of money and Caucasian people in general treated minorities and Aboriginals as common chattel. How society thought and continued to proceed with the First Nations people. How the Caucasian people of privilege felt they had ownership on natives and on that term, an embodiment of slavery, also took place with forced attendance in residential schools, being whipped away from their parents, family, and culture, and even taken away to other countries. This is also slavery. Never once did society think about the real blood families of these children, never once thinking or perhaps not caring that they were participating in cultural genocide, in genocide that annihilated an estimated 120 million natives across North America.
And the Queen kidnapped 10 kids.
Now, which Queen was that?
Queen of England.
Which one? The present one?
Yeah.
Oh.
Is that, it's happened recently, I guess. Let's see. Where
is it? Here. Keep going.
Wait a second.
Wait a minute.
The fight, which has taken a legal turn in about the legal turn is about the 50,000 Native children who are missing in Canada.
Wow.
If the Queen is the Queen of Canada as well, then shouldn't our Queen stand up for justice of Aboriginal peoples? Are Aboriginals not her people as well? Also, there's many, many missing in the United States as well, I'm going to tell you that. Native American children are missing here. It seems that the British have a long, dark history of inhuman treatment of other peoples, Aboriginals, Irish, Scottish, etc., while trying to take over these countries.
Acknowledging the truth will allow the healing process of all nations to begin. History can no longer be revoked by legislative and royal authority. This is about the people's brutish history, which is the truth of what happened to 120 million First Nations people across North America. This is no longer protecting the sovereign and the defeated ideologies of church and state rule that caused mankind to suffer under the great depths of brutality and deprivation. Human suffering is never justified in its history. 50,000 plus little defenseless First Nations children have the right to be represented and heard under Canadian law, indeed under British law in the United Nations. Their surviving families have a right by Canadian jurisprudence to know where their missing children are buried. The surviving families have the right to give these children a traditional native burial, unlike the unmarked mass graves where these children were raped, murdered, and thrown in the ground like garbage without a fleeting thought by the dominant society of the so-called upper class of society. This video, Winds of Change, is dedicated to the passing of William Combs, who fought for justice for Aboriginal children and all First Nations people across North America, alongside Kevin Arnett, rest in peace, brother.
We have all seen over time how crimes against humanity are bestowed on people because of the aristocratic domination. It would be disappointing to me if the Queen did not stand up for what is right and just. I always liked our Queen. I always thought she was handed on one of the worst jobs in mankind, sovereign and royal. Whatever. This guy's nuts. And then she was handed the brutish reins of her ancestors' legacies, a brutish royal past of her ancestors who targeted and set out the other nations and people. So it disturbs me and upsets me to read that my Queen would take part in my disparaging action, in any disparaging action against First Nation people of ancestry. My ideology of true Queen is one of that stands for the rights of other people. This guy's full of shit.
William Combs, Eyewitness, 1952 to 2011, Vancouver, Canada. The Aboriginal man who claimed to witness the abduction of 10 fellow residential school children by the Queen of England and her husband in October 1964 at the Catholic school in Kamloops, British Columbia, has died suddenly at the Catholic-run St. Paul's Hospital in Vancouver. William Combs, age 59 and in good health, was scheduled to be a primary witness at the opening session of the International Tribunal in the Crimes of Church and State on September 12th in London, England. I saw William 10 days ago on the eve of my departure for a European speaking tour, and he looked better than I had seen him in years. According to his partner, May William, he was in stable health and was assigned a new doctor at St. Paul's Hospital this past week. William was committed to the hospital for tests, and his health began to immediately deteriorate. He died suddenly yesterday of an undisclosed cause. The Vancouver coroner's office refused to comment on William's death. William was the sole survivor of a group of three Aboriginal boys who claimed to have witnessed the abduction of 10 children during a royal visit to the Kamloops Residential School in mid-October of 1964, when both the Queen and Prince Philip were in Canada. "They took away those 10 kids and nobody ever saw them again," described Williams in several public statements made over the airways of my former Vancouver Co-op radio program and in the following signed and witnessed declaration made on February 3rd, 2010. "I am an interior Salish spirit dancer and am 58 years old. I live in Vancouver, Canada. I'm a survivor of the Kamloops and Mission Indian residential schools, both run by the Roman Catholic Church. I suffered terrible torture there at the hands, especially of Brother Murphy, who killed at least two children. I witnessed him throw a child off a three-story balcony to her death. He put me on a rack and broke some of my bones in the Kamloops school basement after I tried running away. I also saw him and another priest burying a child in the school orchard one night. In October 1964, when I was 12 years old, I was an inmate at the Kamloops school, and we were visited by the Queen of England and Prince Philip. I remember it was strange because they came by themselves, no big fanfare or nothing. But I recognized them, and the school principal told us it was the Queen, and we all got given new clothes and good food for the first time in months the day before she arrived. The day the Queen got to the school, I was part of a group of kids that went on a picnic with her and her husband and some of the priests down to the meadow near Dead Man's Creek. I remember it was weird because we all had to bend down and kiss her foot, a white lace boot. After a while, I saw the Queen leave the picnic with 10 children from the school, and these kids never returned. We never heard anything more about them and never met them again, even when we were older. They were all from around there, but they all vanished. The group that disappeared was 7 boys and 3 girls in age from 6 to 14 years old. They were all from the smart group in class. 2 of the boys were brothers, and they were from Metis from Quesnel. Their last name was Arnus or Arnold. I don't remember the others, just an occasional first name like Celia, and there was an Edward. What happened was also witnessed by my friend George Adolf, who was 11 years old at the time and a student there too, but he's dead now. I believe that William Combs died of foul play and that his murder was arranged by those who stood to lose from his speaking out about his witnessing of the child abductions and other crimes of murder and torture at Catholic Indian residential schools. I'm writing a soon-to-be-issued eulogy for my friend and fellow fighter, William Arnold Combs. Like another murdered frontline Native activist, Johnny Bingo Dawson, who was killed by the Vancouver police in 2009. William will never be forgotten, and those who killed him will, like the system that caused the deaths of so many children, be brought to real justice. His murders have not won. William's videotaped statements, including his witness of the 1964 abductions, have been registered in the archives of ITCCS and will be made public at our opening session on September 12, 2011. So,
anyway, the article goes on, and you might want, if you're more interested in this, the 2012 scenario is the...
By Stephen Beckholz.
Right. And, I've read much about this, and it's pretty tragic what they've done in Canada. As well as down here. I mean, it's North America, basically, but the Canadians were the worst up there, right? And, as far as selling them to slavery, and you got to remember, there's David Icke states that based on evidence that he's accumulated over the years, that they perform rituals at the Queen of England and the bloodline Illuminati and whatnot, perform these rituals on these children, using them for, killing them, raping them, doing
terrible things.
Yeah. So this is done on a regular basis. So let's see. That was interesting. This one's good. Scientists flips and blows global warming to bits. ClimateGate exposed the fraud. David Evans is a scientist. He has also worked in the heart of the AGW machine. And he consulted full-time for the Australian Greenhouse Office, and now the Department of Climate Change, from 1999 to 2005. The part-time 2008 to 2010 modeling Australia's carbon in plants, debris, mulch, soil, and forestry, and agricultural products. He has 6 university degrees, including a PhD in electrical engineering from Stanford University. The other day, he said, "The debate about global warming has reached ridiculous proportions and is full of micro-thin half-truths and misunderstandings. I am a scientist who is on the carbon gravy train, understands the evidence was once an alarmist, but now I am a skeptic." And, tell you why. And with that, he begins to the demolition of the theories, premises, and methods by which AGW scare has been foisted on the public. The politics. The whole idea of the carbon dioxide is the main cause of the whole idea that carbon dioxide is the main cause of the recent global warming is based on a guess that has proved false by empirical evidence during the 1990s. But the gravy train was too big, and too many jobs, industries, trading profits, political careers, and the possibility of world government and total control riding on the outcome. So rather than admit they were wrong, the governments and their tame climate scientists now outrageously maintain the fiction that carbon dioxide is a dangerous pollutant. He makes clear he understands that CO2 is indeed a greenhouse gas, and makes the point that if all else was equal, then yes, more CO2 in the air could and would mean a warmer planet. But that's where the current science goes off the tracks. It is built on an assumption that is false. But the issue is not whether carbon dioxide warms the planet, but how much. And most scientists on both sides also agree on how much of a given increase in the level of carbon dioxide raises the planet's temperature, if just the extra carbon dioxide is considered. These calculations come from laboratory experiments, and the basic physics have been well known for a century. But the disagreement comes about what happens next. The planet reacts to what extra carbon dioxide, which changes everything. Most critically, the extra warmth causes more water to evaporate from the oceans. But does the water hang around and increase the height of moist air in the atmosphere, or does it simply create more clouds and rain? Back in 1980, when the carbon dioxide theory started, no one knew. The alarmists guessed that it would increase the height of moist air around the planet, which would warm the planet even further, because the moist air is also a greenhouse gas. But it didn't increase the height of the moist air around the planet, as subsequent studies have shown since that time. However, that theory on premise became the heart of the modeling that was done by alarmist crowds. And so everything that they based it on is false, science. Well, false science. So you can check this out, this article out. It's a little longer.
Hot air.
Let's go to hot air. And
Close this right here. And it was by Bruce McQuain.
And it tells you a whole lot of
information on that.
On the hoax.
Yep.
This is interesting. You want to read that one?
Yeah. Clearly you don't have to be intelligent to be an intelligence. Secret Service interrogates Tacoma 7th grader. A Tacoma 7th grader faced federal interrogation at school for what he posted on his Facebook page. His mom said it happened, all happened without her knowledge or permission. Whoops, our cat is going crazy. Come on, kitty, kitty, kitty. Sorry. Timmy Robinson said she had just finished lunch with a friend Friday when she got a phone call from her son's school. Let's see what they said. Take us a minute to find it. Q13Fox.com. Let's see. Oh, here it is. Let's play this video for you.
I confess, I'm not perfect. I can't sew, knit, or crochet.
I thought that was on the thing.
I might have flaws, but this isn't one of them. Your moment, your dove.
Sorry.
It's coming.
Good evening, I'm David Rose.
And I'm Maria Arcega Dunn. A Tacoma boy's mother says the Secret Service grabbed him out of class last Friday for what he posted on his Facebook page.
She was so outraged it happened without her knowledge or permission, she contacted us. Dana Revick has more on this exclusive story.
They're very shocked.
It's the kind of call no mother wants to get.
My phone rings, I look at it, and it was the number to his school. And I answer it, and it's the school security guard just giving me a FYI, you know, for your information, just to give you a heads up. The Secret Service is here with the Tacoma Police Department, and they have Vito, and they're talking to him.
It turns out, after Osama bin Laden was killed, Vito La Pinta posted an update to his Facebook status that got the feds' attention.
I was saying how Osama's dead and for Obama to be careful because there might be suicide bombers.
A week later, while Vito was in his fourth period class, he got called to the principal's office.
A man walked in a suit and glasses, and he said that he was part of the Secret Service, and he told me it was because of a post that I made, and it indicated as a threat towards the president.
Tacoma schools did acknowledge that a Secret Service agent questioned Vito, but after that, the story becomes very different. They say a security guard called Vito's mom because the principal was on the other line and that they didn't wait for her to arrive because they felt that she didn't take the phone call seriously.
That's a blatant lie.
Timmy Robertson says she rushed to Truman Middle School. school immediately and arrived to discover her boy had already been questioned for half an hour.
I just about lost it. You know, my son, my 13-year-old son, who is a minor, who's supposed to be safe and secure in his classroom at school, is being interrogated without my knowledge or consent privately by the Secret Service. I was very scared.
The seventh grader says once his mom showed up, the agent finished the interview and told him he wasn't in any trouble. Now he's more careful about what he posts online. But Timmy says the school and the Secret Service are the ones who need to watch themselves.
For me, it's not about what my son did or didn't do. It's the way they handled it, because he's still a child.
In Tacoma, Dana Rebic, Q13, Fox News.
They don't have the right.
We also reached out to the Secret Service agent for comment today, but we have not heard back yet.
You're not going to hear back. Secret Service injury. You know.
A seventh grader.
Yeah, I mean, this is absurd.
Why don't they be worried with the real criminals?
I'll tell you right now, Obama is the biggest piece of shit I've ever seen.
He's a hypocrite.
You know? And you know, I've said this nationally I've said this openly for 10 years, and no one's questioned me. All of a sudden, some little poor bastard gets you know.
He was telling him to be careful.
That's all. Yeah. But, I mean, what kind of bullshit is that? I mean, you know, I've seen stuff on Facebook. I've written stuff on Facebook. Nobody, you know. I mean, how the hell does this stuff happen? It's beyond me. Absolutely beyond me. Nabka killings. Israeli envoy told to blame Syria. Faced with growing international concern over the killing of some 20 civilian protesters along its borders with Lebanon and Syria, excuse me, the wounding of hundreds of others, Israeli foreign minister was issued a memorandum defining the official PR stance that Israeli officials abroad are to take with respect to the killing. The official stance will be that the deaths are entirely the fault of the Syrian government. The Syrian government did. These guys are complete bastards. And the official stance, yeah, with the argument being that since Syria's military controls its border crossing into Israel, the protesters must have had official military permission to cross. Israeli officials were quick to term the civilian protest is an existential threat to the nation of Israel, and to praise the military for killing them. Exactly how Israel will manage to blame the 10 civilians its soldiers killed inside Lebanon and Syria is unclear. At the same time, as the Israeli foreign minister was coming up with the blame Syria stance, Israeli military officials had already decided to blame all of the killings on Iran, with a military spokesman calling for the deaths a clear Iranian provocation. I mean, you know, get your freaking lies straight, Israel. You know, unbelievable. This is, you can go to the Ugly Truth, probably .com, I guess. Unbelievable. Wants to go to a quick break, or?
Yeah, and maybe you can find that.
You want me to find that?
Yeah.
Okay, I can do that.
And that was on. What was that on exactly? The video.
I think I got it on my Facebook. I got it on my email. George sent that up to me.
Okay.
Take a look at it. So I'm going to go to a quick to a little break here. Let's see. We haven't had this one for a long time. Let's play this song. got a little video here that was sent to me by my friend George Dixon.
Okay.
And it was about what is the internet hiding? And it's really, it's not that long. It's about 3 minutes or so, but it's very, very interesting. And short answer, way more than you think. Our Eli Parisner, from MoveOn.org laid it out in this eye-opening TED talk and got a standing ovation for his trouble. He's got a new book out on based on this, but it says The Filter Bubble and What the Internet is Hiding from You. I want you to hear this. It's pretty interesting. And here we go.
Mark Zuckerberg, a journalist, was asking him a question about the news feed. And the journalist was asking him, you know, why is this so important? And Zuckerberg said, a squirrel dying in your front yard may be more relevant to your interests right now than people dying in Africa. And I want to talk about what a web based on that idea of relevance might look like. So when I was growing up in a really rural area in Maine, you know, the internet meant something very different to me. It meant a connection to the world. It meant something that would connect us all together. And I was sure that it was going to be great for democracy and for our society. But there's this kind of shift in how information is flowing online. And it's invisible. And if we don't pay attention to it, it could be a real problem. So I first noticed this in a place I spend a lot of time, my Facebook page. I'm progressive politically, big surprise, but I've always gone out of my way to meet conservatives. I like hearing what they're thinking about. I like seeing what they link to. I like learning a thing or two. And so I was kind of surprised when I noticed one day that the conservatives had disappeared from my Facebook feed. And what it turned out was going on was that Facebook was looking at which links I clicked on. And it was noticing that actually I was clicking more on my liberal friends' links than on my conservative friends' links. And without consulting me about it, it had edited them out. They disappeared. So Facebook isn't the only place that's doing this kind of invisible algorithmic editing of the web. Google's doing it too. If I search for something and you search for something, even right now at the very same time, we may get very different search results. Even if you're logged out, one engineer told me, there are 57 signals that Google looks at. Everything from what kind of computer you're on, to what kind of browser you're using, to where you're located, that it uses to personally tailor your query results. Think about it for a second. There is no standard Google anymore. And, you know, the funny thing about this is that it's hard to see. You can't see how different your search results are from anyone else's. But a couple of weeks ago, I asked a bunch of friends to Google Egypt and to send me screenshots of what they got. So here's my friend Scott's screenshot, and here's my friend Daniel's screenshot. When you put them side by side, you don't even have to read the links to see how different these two pages are. But when you do read the links, it's really quite remarkable. Daniel didn't get anything about the protests in Egypt at all in his first page of Google results. Scott's results were full of them. And this was the big story of the day at that time. That's how different these results are becoming. So it's not just Google and Facebook either. You know, this is something that's sweeping the web. There are a whole host of companies that are doing this kind of personalization. Yahoo News, the biggest news site on the internet, is now personalized. Different people get different things. Huffington Post, The Washington Post, New York Times, all flirting with personalization in various ways. And where this moves us very quickly toward a world in which the internet is showing us what it thinks we want to see, but not necessarily what we need to see. As Eric Schmidt said, it'll be very hard for people to watch or consume something that is not in some sense been tailored for them. So I do think this is a problem. And I think if you take all of these filters together, if you take all of these algorithms, you get what I call a filter bubble. And your filter bubble is kind of your own personal, unique universe of information that you live in online. And what's in your filter bubble depends on who you are, and it depends on what you do. But the thing is that you don't decide what gets in. And more importantly, you don't actually see what gets edited out. So one of the problems with the filter bubble was discovered by some researchers at Netflix. And they were looking at the Netflix queues, and they noticed something kind of funny that a lot of us probably have noticed, which is there's some movies that just sort of zip right up and out to our houses. They enter the queue, they just zip right out. So Iron Man zips right out, right? And Waiting for Superman can wait for a really long time. What they discovered was that in our Netflix queues, there's kind of this epic struggle going on between our future aspirational selves and our more impulsive present selves. You know, we all want to be someone who has watched Rashomon. But right now, we want to watch Ace Ventura for the fourth time. So the best editing gives us a bit of both. It gives us a little bit of Justin Bieber and a little bit of Afghanistan. It gives us some information vegetables. It gives us some information dessert. And the challenge with these kind of algorithmic filters, these personalized filters, is that because they're mainly looking at what you click on first, you know, it can throw off that balance. And instead of a balanced information diet, you can end up surrounded by information junk food. So what this suggests is actually that we may have the story about the internet wrong. In a broadcast society, you know, this is how the founding mythology goes, right? In a broadcast society, there were these gatekeepers, the editors, and they controlled the flows of information. And along came the internet, and it swept them out of the way, and it allowed all of us to connect together, and it was awesome. But that's not actually what's happening right now. What we're seeing is more of a passing of the torch from human gatekeepers to algorithmic ones. And the thing is that the algorithms don't yet have the kind of embedded ethics that the editors did. So if algorithms are going to curate the world for us, if they're going to decide what we get to see and what we don't get to see, then we need to make sure that they're not just keyed to relevance. We need to make sure that they also show us things that are uncomfortable or challenging or important. This is what TED does, right? Other points of view. And the thing is, we've actually kind of been here before as a society. In 1915, it's not like newspapers were sweating a lot about their civic responsibilities. Then people kind of noticed that they were doing something really important. That in fact, you couldn't have a functioning democracy if citizens didn't get a good flow of information. That the newspapers were critical because they were acting as the filter, and that journalistic ethics developed. It wasn't perfect, but it got us through the last century. And so now, we're kind of back in 1915 on the web. And we need the new gatekeepers to encode that kind of responsibility into the code that they're writing. You know, I know there are a lot of people here from Facebook and from Google, Larry and Sergey, who, you know, people who have helped build the web as it is, and I'm grateful for that. But we really need you to make sure that these algorithms have encoded in them a sense of the public life, a sense of civic responsibility. We need you to make sure that they're transparent enough that we can see what the rules are that determine what gets through our filters. And we need you to give us some control so that we can decide what gets through and what doesn't. Because I think we really need the internet to be that thing that we all dreamed of it being. We need it to connect us all together. We need it to introduce us to new ideas and new people and different perspectives. And it's not going to do that if it leaves us all isolated in a web of one. Thank you.
Now that was Ellie Parisner.
Mm-hmm.
Parisner. He's the chief of MoveOn.org, which I don't particularly care for as a group. They're a democratic mouthpiece, you know. And nevertheless, he's got a point there, and I thought it was valid. I'm going to get out of that one. And still got about 15 minutes. You up for it, Lila?
Yep.
It's okay.
NATO helicopter, what's that about? Operation of Afghanistan.
For war on Afghanistan, Pakistan.
Oh.
It's only a few minutes. You want to check
it out? Yeah, check that one out. Okay. I just want to see what they're saying. It says alert.
All right, news alert.
Some stones that have actually rumbled over the security personnel, and according to the officials, these are just minor injuries that happened. Yeah. Sure, yeah.
What has the army done in response to the violation of these NATO choppers into Pakistani airspace?
As I told you, Sheriar, officials say, this is an official statement that has been given out, saying that this checkpost is located on the zero line between Pakistan and Afghanistan. These helicopters were just about to intrude into Pakistan's territory, were fired. So definitely the helicopters moved back, but they did fire a retaliatory shot, because of which stones and pebbles from the nearby mountain.
It's very hard.
Yeah, I'm sure that probably didn't go across at all, across as an audio.
Probably not.
Let me just read
what it was about. And it says, with the Obama administration fast approaching a July deadline, that mandates troops be withdrawn from Afghanistan, Pakistan is moving into the crosshairs of the next targeted conquest of the war on terror, with NATO helicopters launching an attack on a Pakistani military outpost today, triggering a firefight that injured two soldiers as Pakistan moves closer to China in an effort to avoid geopolitical isolation. So they, you know, this is interesting. This is from Prison Planet here, but let's see what happens.
Lining up to fight China?
Yeah. Although NATO claimed it was responding to an unprovoked attack, Pakistan lodged a strong protest, stating that its soldiers were merely responding to an illegal incursion into Pakistani airspace. The incident is certain to weigh on relations between U.S. and Pakistan, have been pushed almost to the breaking point after the May 2nd raid on Abbottabad that killed bin Laden, with Pakistan's parliament condemning the operation as a violation of the nation's sovereignty, which it's right. Mm-hmm. And Pakistan's political leaders, as well as its citizens, have been vociferous in their protest against U.S. Predator drone strikes in the country that have killed 10 innocent people for every militant killed. These demonstrations reached fever pitch in the days before Obama announcement the Navy SEALs had killed bin Laden at a compound in Abbottabad.
So let's see, what does it say down here?
What?
What does Alex Jones have to say on that?
I don't even know if I want to check that out.
Stock up with fresh food that lasts with beef. Oh, that's an advertisement.
This is an interview with
General
Hamid Ghul, which is impossible to understand.
Yeah. We tried to do that before.
Really. But anyway, we're screwing around over there, and we're we have no right to be there, okay? And trying to go to war with Pakistan now that we can't win a war in Afghanistan. So anyway, what a joke. And Fukushima nuclear meltdown actually occurred just 16 hours after earthquake. More meltdowns on the way. The truth has finally come out as officials from Tokyo Electric Power Company now admit that the fuel in Reactor 1 of the Fukushima nuclear complex melted just 16 hours after the devastating earthquake and tsunami hit the area in March
11,
2001. 2011.
When asked why it took more than 2 months to reveal the critical information, TEPCO officials claim that a lack of data left the company unaware of the core's true condition until only recently, and new reports indicate that other meltdowns could soon follow. That's pretty scary.
Yeah. This is from Natural News.
According to recent report from the Mannanichi Daily News, In Japan, TEPCO officials recently announced that based on new data, water levels in the pressure vessel at Reactor 1 began to drop rapidly within just a few hours after losing power at 3:30 p.m. on March 11th. By 7:30 p.m., fuel was fully exposed, and by 9 p.m., reactor core temperatures reached an astounding 2,800 degrees Celsius, or 5,072 degrees Fahrenheit, and by 6:50 a.m. the next morning, a full meltdown occurred. So for all the time that electric power was out in multiple reactors, causing the cooling system to fail, and during the months after, it was widely known that water levels were consistently dropping in reactor 4 due to leaks. TEPCO played the ignorance card, acting as though it had no idea how serious the situation that the plant actually was. Surely the company must know, even without access to detailed analysis, that when the cooling systems fail and fuel rods become fully exposed, the meltdown is sure to follow. Even regular folks with no background in nuclear technology can put two and two together to figure that one out.
But apparently TEPCO thinks it can keep playing dumb and with the world, and that the world will simply believe whatever it says. The new revelation, however, proves that the company is greatly underestimating the fallout from the situation at best and deliberately hiding the truth at worst. And either way, the situation is far more dire than they have all been
led to believe.
Where are you going? Oh. TEPCO could have assumed that when the loss of power made it impossible to cool down the reactor, it would soon lead to a meltdown of the core, said Haruki Kode, professor of nuclear safety engineering at Kyoto University. TEPCO's persistent explanation that the damage to the fuel had been limited turned out to be wrong. And shortly after the announcement about Reactor 1, the Telegraph reported that two more Fukushima reactors may soon suffer a meltdown as well. In effect, efforts to cool fuel in reactors 2 and 3 have failed, and experts say that if the reactor cores have not already melted, they soon will. We are screwed, tooed, and tattooed, buddy. You know? I mean, three or four major meltdowns in the same... This is dreadful. Mass animal deaths continue as thousands of dead walleye wash up in Lake Erie.
Pollution?
I guess so.
Experts are trying to figure out why thousands of dead walleye fish have been washing up on a roughly 25-mile stretch of Lake Erie between the northern Ohio cities of Toledo and Port Clinton over the past few weeks. The mysterious deaths add to the millions of others that have occurred since the beginning of 2011, and most of whose cause of death has never been conclusively determined. According to a recent report in the News Messenger, tens of thousands of fish have washed up on Ohio beaches in recent days, and a majority of them have been between 2.5 to 3 pounds in weight. Some local anglers have told reporters that the sight of these dead fish is highly unusual, and they appear to be coming from the west.
This is also from Natural News, but...
I'm hearing tens of thousands, maybe, on the high side, said Ohio Department of Natural Resources biologist and program administrator Roger Knight to reporters. This is something out of the ordinary. Knight and colleagues are currently investigating the deaths to determine their cause. Several explanations have already been put forth, including unusually cold weather in recent months that may have killed the walleye during their spawning period. Other explanations include overfishing by commercial operations in Canada, even a mystery virus. The Great Lakes in general, which represent 20% of the world's total freshwater supply, are known to be highly contaminated with industrial chemicals and pollutants, including but not limited to pesticides, herbicides, persistent organic pollutants, and heavy metals like mercury. These and other pollutants likely play some role in the mysterious fish death. You can see a full list of mysterious animal deaths that occurred with just the first 2 weeks of January by visiting Natural News. Let's look at that. Let's see what the list of animals that have died.
The updated timeline does not border on a timeline of the mysterious animal deaths now happening around the world. Conventional explanations for these deaths now border on the outlandish. A bird die-off event in Romania is now being blamed on drunkenness, for example. Here's the update. 200 cows found dead in Wisconsin, allegedly caused by a virus. 100 dead carp found in UK pond, unknown causes. 730 gray parrots died during flight, blamed on possible exposure to carbon monoxide. 300 grackle birds found dead on a highway in Alabama, blamed on blunt force trauma. That's bullshit. No.
Thousands of gizzard shadfish float to the top of Lake Michigan and wash up on the shores near Chicago, blamed on cold water. Countless fish found dead in UK brook, unknown causes. 100 dead starling birds found dead on highway in East California, allegedly all hit by a truck. Dozens of dead starling birds in Romania blamed on drunkenness. More than 1,000 dead turtle doves found in Italy, unknown causes. 40,000-plus dead devil crabs washed ashore in the UK, unknown causes. Hundreds of dead birds found on a highway in Texas, unknown causes. Large amount of dead fish wash up on New Zealand beaches, unknown causes.
Up to 100 jackdaw birds found dead on a road in Sweden, unknown cause. Several dead manatees found on Florida coast, unknown reasons. Thousands of dead fish wash up on creek in Florida. Hundreds of dead fish washed ashore on St. Clair River
in Ontario, Canada. Hundreds of dead blackbirds found on a highway in Louisiana. Dozens of dead birds show up in a woman's backyard.
Dozens of dead birds found on a highway in Louisiana suffering from internal injuries and blood clots.
Dozens of dead birds show up in a woman's backyard in Kentucky, unknown causes. Tens of thousands of dead fish wash ashore in the Chesapeake Bay, blamed on cold water. 100 tons of dead fish wash ashore in Brazil, 100 tons, unknown causes. 100,000-plus dead fish found in Arkansas River, unknown cause. 5,000-plus dead birds found in Arkansas suffering from massive trauma and blood clots. Dozens of fish found dead in San Antonio, Texas, unknown causes. 70 bats found dead in Tucson, Arizona, unknown cause.
What would that massive trauma and blood clots, what would cause that? 5,000 birds.
They must have gotten into some chemicals.
No, massive trauma would mean that.
Oh, they were hurt.
They were blunt trauma. What, somebody go in and bang them on the head or something?
I don't know.
That doesn't sound, that's bizarre. And blood clots would cause by the trauma.
I don't know.
Dozens of fish found dead in San Antonio, Texas, unknown cause. 70 bats found dead in Tucson, Arizona. We got thousands of bats around North New England that have died because of some fungus. A score of dead fish washed ashore in Lake Haiti.
In a lake in Haiti.
Hundreds of dead sea creatures washed ashore in South Carolina.
Blamed on cold water.
10 tons of the most deadly, of most dead fish, wait,
of mostly,
10 tons of mostly dead fish found in fishing net in New Zealand. Mostly dead fish. More than 100 dead pelicans turn up in North Carolina.
Thousands of dead fish turn up in a bay in the Philippines. Dead fish wash ashore at the beach in Indiana, blamed on windstorms. Thousands of dead fish washed ashore in a Florida beach, blamed on cold weather. Thousands of dead barramundi fish wash up in Australia, unknown cause.
Amazing. But anyway, you can check this out on naturalnews.com.
And we've come right to the end of our show. That's not a very happy way to end it with all those dead animals. It makes you feel terrible.
I don't know if there's something happier, but this is scary. This one's scary. I feel sorry for anybody out there doing it. Well, I'll start stripping out retirees' pension funds, federal funds. The U.S. administration has temporarily halted payments to the retirement and federal pension accounts of for workers after the government hit its debt limit. American administration has also begun to dip into federal worker pension funds after reaching the United States' $14.3 trillion debt. They're actually stealing the funds. Bastards. The latest development prompted the government to start borrowing from pensioners. Treasury Secretary
Geithner
informed.
This isn't a happy note either.
And this has got to come from Press TV, Iranian TV.
You don't hear
about it on the U.S. TV.
No. Right. Stealing money from government workers.
Government workers' pensions. Oh, man. The latest development prompted the government to stop borrowing from pensioners. Geithner has sent a letter to Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid warning that the government can move money around for about 11 weeks, but if a new debt ceiling is not agreed to by August 2nd, the U.S. government would effectively default on its obligations to its creditors. He also warned of catastrophic economic consequences for citizens. We're trying to figure out what to do about the budget. The situation creates an urgency to do something to the budget in order to get that debt ceiling increased. Government pensions or agriculture will probably see a lot of changes to make us able to lift the debt ceiling, says Maya McGinnis, the head of Committee of Responsible Federal Budget. She's probably a Republican. Who knows? U.S. President Barack Obama has warned of a double-dip recession if administration is not allowed to keep borrowing. But a Gallup public opinion poll indicates that nearly half of those polled oppose raising the national debt.
Well, they don't know anything.
Yeah. The new polls show 47% of Americans do not want the debt ceiling raised. If Congress fails to raise the debt ceiling by August 2nd, it would force the administration to choose between paying creditors or paying for military operations, Social Security, Medicare payments, and other commitments. I think if they stop paying for military operations, I think we would
have plenty of money.
Plenty and plenty of dough. All right, so maybe they should stop.
I don't think there's any maybe in it for me.
I think they
stop the war.
Stop the wars. Pay for Social Security
what you owe
and everything
for
else.
People.
Pay and don't start stealing from federal pensioners for crying out loud.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we've come to the end of our show, and we hope you got some information that maybe you hadn't heard. And we hope you'll stay tuned for
next time.
Thursday and Friday.
Thursday night and Friday night. We'll have
George Dixon.
Yeah.
So it was nice to talk with you folks. Tune in again tomorrow. And if you can't tomorrow or Friday, be with us next week. Good night, folks.
Yeah, good night, everybody. And give me a second here. I'll get back to...